some background on Meiser, some practical halacha, and then go through some cases. Huh? Huh? You can come back. So the who? Okay. So there is a mitzvah in the Torah to give tzedakah. There's a separate mitzvah, a separate idea of Meiser. The mitzvah of giving tzedakah, technically, one fulfills giving a very minimal amount. In 1990, they at the current prices at the time, they calculated it as $4 a year to fulfill your basic mitzvah of tzedakah. Would be just giving that much, the minimum.
Do it now.
Besides the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, there's another idea to give meiser. Even somebody who gives a significant amount of their income to tzedakah, but if it's done haphazardly, without calculating, without working out how much he earned and how much he profited, and working out 10%, that's not a fulfillment of meiser. So it's not just like you have to hit a certain mark, and if you hit it, you got it. Meiser is specifically worked out and calculated, not haphazard. There are even opinions that it's got to be exactly 10%, not more either. So there are those that suggest that what you should just stipulate that what you're giving is up till 10% is meiser, and anything that you give beyond that, you should try to calculate, but anything you give beyond 10% should not be meiser. It should just be regular tzedakah to try to have precisely 10%. As to the source of meiser, so I'll just run through it quickly what we saw on the source sheets. We find that Yaakov Avinu gave meiser. The Rambam says that Yitzchak really already started with meiser, and there are others, including the Medrash, the Pirkei Rabbi Elazar, that says that Avram Avinu started giving meiser. We saw in the sources that Chazal said that in contrast to anywhere else, you're actually supposed to test Hashem with meiser, and that it'll make you wealthy. The Torah promises you, Hashem promises that if you give meiser, I will make you wealthy, and you can test Hashem. You can say, I'm going to give meiser, let's make it work. For that reason, if I'm not getting the Masorah incorrect, and Rabbi Haber will correct me, Rav Scheinberg said that even though, we'll see, maybe technically somebody who can't afford it isn't obligated in doing it, but Rav Scheinberg said it was a little bit of a twisted thinking. Because if Chazal promises you, if the Torah promises you that if you give meiser, you'll be wealthy, so then saying that I can't afford it is the opposite. If you can't afford it, that's all the more reason to give meiser. As hard as that may be, it's a test. But certainly we see that Chazal did make us that promise. In terms of the philosophy of meiser, so to as I understand it, meiser is the idea of meiser is that it elevates everything. I take everything that I have and I recognize, and this is where it ties into Thanksgiving, is that I appreciate everything that I have is from Hashem, and by taking everything, working out what I have, and then saying, okay, now a part of this, right, it's not just arbitrarily I have, so I'll give, and I don't have, but that I go through and I appreciate what I have, and then 10% of that I say, okay, now this I'm going to use for mitzvahs, and this I'm going to use for tzedakah, so that it sort of gives a context and elevation to everything that I have, a recognition that everything I have is from Hashem, which is also the theme of Thanksgiving. It's supposed to be a day of recognizing what we have is from Hashem and being grateful for that. And that's why it's 10%. It's not just, I think that's the idea here. It's not just, 10% isn't just a measure. How much am I chayav? How much matzah do I eat? A kazayas. How much tzedakah do I give? 10%. It doesn't work that way. It's more than just how much you're supposed to give. It's supposed to be specifically a part of a whole, because it gives a context and a recognition to the whole that everything I have is from Hashem, and to see that. So much so that there are those that say that even though, like we mentioned, really, somebody who can't afford to give meiser isn't obligated to do so. There are poskim that say that even if you're going to not give meiser, you should separate meiser and keep it for yourself. And it's not just like, okay, the Torah says give up to whatever percent to other people. If I can't give, I'm not going to give it. This idea of recognizing and separating out 10%, and then if I can't afford to give it, so then I'll keep it. But just separating it out is of significance, I think, because of that recognition. Now, Yaakov, this Rav Moshe Feinstein points out, and this is very important, Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that Yaakov Avinu, he comes from Yaakov Avinu says, everything Hashem gives me I'm going to give Maisa, right? So this idea, this philosophy that recognizing what Hashem has given us and then saying, okay, so 10% of that, a percentage of that needs to be rededicated to Him, right, applies to everything, says Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's not just money, it's not just produce, as prescribed by the Torah, but it's everything. And he says that includes time, and it includes energy, and I would add it includes passion, that Hashem has given us all these things. These are all things that Hashem has given us, and a percentage of that, an amount of that, is meant to be given back and rededicated. And everybody has, and this community is actually remarkable in that regard, that everything here, there's so many institutions and so few people, and everything runs on participating in this this leadership training thing in the Federation, the Satid. So, you know, the people from B'nai get up and they say, I'm representing Bina, Yak, the Shul, this, that. Everyone's on like 10 lists. It's true, because everyone does everything. But that's part of it, our time and our energy. And I would add that the if I can plug the Kollel program, the Partners in Torah that's coming up, is an opportunity for everybody here. Everybody here has Hashem has given us, through His good grace, the recognition and appreciation of the beauty of a Torah life. And that's something that a huge percentage of the Jewish people and the community abroad in the Tidewater area hasn't encountered in order to appreciate it. And we have the opportunity to bring that to them. We have an opportunity to reach out to our friends and acquaintances and business partners and whatever it is, co-workers, and say, you know what, why don't you come in and once a week we'll get together an hour a week. And, you know, if it doesn't work out here and there, so we'll just, you know, give them a text and say we're off this week. But to introduce them to something beautiful that has enriched our lives, and there's no reason for us not to feel, if we appreciate that, we want to not want to enrich their lives. We have that. We have that bracha in our life. To have that, we need to share that as well. And this is an opportunity to do so, a unique opportunity. And this program is a cornerstone of Kiruv, and the cornerstone of reaching out in many communities around the country. This program is where it starts. It's a real nucleus of spreading the beauty of Torah to outside the community. Okay. Okay, so in the Ramah, getting into the halachic section, the Ramah points out that the Shulchan Aruch left out the halachos of Maisani. The Shulchan Aruch leaves out things that are mitzvahs that are not applicable nowadays at the Beis HaMikdash, including Truma Meiser, including that, he leaves out the Torah halacha of giving 10% of your income once every 3 years to Aniyim. And the Rama points out that had he included it, it would have been very helpful in guiding the money, the mitzvah that we do of giving tzedakah, but he left it out, which means there's a lot of ambiguity. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted as saying that a lot of his rulings, and we'll get into some of them, are based on just logic, on good logic, which is his logic was pretty good, but there isn't a lot to work with in terms of sources. In terms of the nature of the chiyuv of giving ma'aser, which leads very strongly into the ramifications in practical halacha, there are opinions that, as we saw, there are opinions that it is deraisa. There are opinions that the Sifri sounds like we learned it from a pasuk. We see that Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov may have given it. Yaakov may have given Meiser. It appears to be, there are those that say it's a biblical obligation. There are those that say it's not. All those sources are hints and whatnot, but it's really derabanan. The prevailing accepted opinion in modern day poskim is that it's neither. It's not a deraisa. It's not a mitzvah derabanan. It's a minhag. It's a minhag that the Jewish people have done. It's an ancient minhag, and it's one that Jews should accept, but it's a minhag. Nonetheless, we saw in the sources that even if it is a minhag, somebody doing it just once, according to some opinions, might make it a neder. And if someone's parents did it, that might be binding through their minhag, one that you can't get out of. So the post can point out that when one embarks on giving ma'aser, they should stipulate that they're doing it bli neder. You shouldn't get yourself in trouble. The fact that it's a minhag and not a binding halacha has many ramifications and leniencies in halacha. One of them is using it for things other than poor people. The halacha of Meiser in the Torah is Meiser Ani. Giving poor people Meiser is specifically poor people. Because what we do is a minhag, so we, it's a machlokas, but we have halachically the right to use it for yeshivas, the right to use it for hospitals, right, whatever the case may be. You have to ask Shilas about what's allowed, but to use it for, like we saw, buying svarim, if you don't have other means, perhaps. We can use it for broader uses. One thing you cannot use it for are even mitzvahs which you already have a personal obligation. The Torah says, wear tefillin, that's your problem. You can't use meister to fulfill your obligation to wear tefillin or buy matzah. It has to be things that are not already an obligation on you. Based on that, and certainly not personal debts, based on that, the Taz that we saw in the sources says that if you're buying kibudim, if you want to buy aliyahs and things like that, Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, Yom Tov, they have auctions, you want to buy the rights to various mitzvahs. So as long as you have in mind when you're bidding that the money is coming out of Meiser, it's just a pledge to tzedakah, it's a fair use of your Meiser. The fact that you're getting some kind of honor reciprocation is fine, the Taz says. But if he accepted himself the obligation to pay for a kibud and then later decided, hey, why don't I just use Meiser, then you can't, because that's considered paying off a personal debt already incurred through Meiser money.
If you use Meiser to buy a pair of tefillin, are you allowed to use those tefillin now if you bought it with the wrong kind of money?
Maybe you just have to give other money to Meiser. It's not like there's holiness on the money. It probably just doesn't come out of your account, your quote-unquote account of Meiser. Is that a fair, proper Meiser use? The Ramah, as we mentioned, the Ramah says that someone who can't afford Meiser shouldn't give it. His own life takes precedence. But there are, like I mentioned, there are those that say that it's still worthwhile to separate a tenth of your income and just keep it for yourself and fulfill the idea of Meiser that way. This idea of not having enough money, not giving, though, is may only be if he has the barest, he's living with the barest minimum. You have to ask a Rav what the exact guidelines, at what point you're considered not being able to afford Meiser. Okay. Now, in terms of practically keeping track of Meiser, the calculations, so the Chavetz Chaim goes through to try to make a system for doing so. He basically says there are two ways. Yeah, let's wait for that. He says like this, that a person should set up an accounting system, accounting period. He should say whatever it is. He makes up a year, half a year. He should make up whatever is convenient for him. Maybe the largest span he mentions specifically is a year. So maybe it's worthwhile not to go more than a year. But he should make up a date, beginning and end date of an accounting period. And he should keep track throughout that time of his net gains. And at the end of that period, he should calculate his losses, his business losses. We'll get into more detail how that works. And he should, throughout that time, also keep track of any tzedakah that he gives. Even if it's a person comes to the door or comes around shul and you hand them whatever you have in your pocket, anything can be calculated that. Keep track of all of that. And at the end of the counting period, sit down. How much did I gain? How much did I lose? What's my net profit? How much did I give to tzedakah? Any debt remaining owed to tzedakah, you should set aside immediately, and you're supposed to give it out without delay. If there aren't any immediate causes, immediate poor people, whatever immediate causes he wants to give to, he's allowed to hold on to it until the opportunity presents itself. But as soon as he's approached by somebody who's genuinely deserving, because he has this outstanding debt, he has a responsibility to give it right away. And if he doesn't have money on him to give, if he has this outstanding debt, and only in that situation, he's supposed to borrow if he can to try to fulfill that obligation and then pay back, obviously, from the money that he owes to Meiser. And the same may be true, Kaska Shaila, if he's expecting new income shortly. If somebody approaches him and you don't owe any Meiser, but you know that your paycheck's coming tomorrow and you're going to have Meiser from that, then you may be obligated also to give immediately because you have income coming on the way.
Is it so clear that you can even pay prospectively Meiser?
Well, we'll see in a second. It's a good question. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. If this is an application of that, this is a chumrah of that. In terms of keeping track, the Chavetz Chaim says of what you owe, he says there's two ways to do it. Either you could have a separate bank account for Meiser and deposit any Meiser money that you owe right away or as you calculate it into this account, and then you have a separate account, you know this is my Meiser money. Or if it works better for you to keep an accounting book where you keep track of how much owed. Look, it's a debt. How much do I owe? How much have I paid? Quote unquote paid. Anything that I give to tzedakah is considered a debt paid, and treat it like that. In terms of giving Meiser in advance, like Ellie was talking about, so because it's not so simple, it's a little controversial. So there are opinions that say you could stipulate that ahead of time. Again, because it's a minig, there is a little bit of leeway in terms of how you set it up. You can set it up to a degree how you want to. So they say that you should, when you start keeping maaser, you should stipulate that you want to be able to give in advance, or if you give in advance, if you overgive, and you found out that you overgave, that you could deduct that from your future debts, but you should ask a Rav.
Isn't that part of the Chavetz Chaim's plan? The Chavetz Chaim said you do it by the year, so you probably will end up giving a little bit in advance.
If you give all that.
What?
If you give all that.
Yeah, I think that's part of his plan.
Right, the way he lays it out is, you, at the end of the year, you might find that you're short X, right?
It's also possible.
Right. Okay.
No, what I'm saying is no. What I'm saying, within that year, from month to month, if you're going on a yearly budget, then it's very likely you'll give more. You'll be giving part of the February one, because he says don't even bother counting till December.
Right.
So that's part of his plan.
Perhaps. Okay. Now, the Chavetz Chaim points out that his whole system works best for people who get money in large sums, either through business, either through business, like you have a deal and then the money comes in, or you have a salary, your paycheck comes in. Someone has a store and is, you know, dollars are going in, dollars are going out, and it's just a constantly back and forth in a store, so then it's not as practical. He says that you should basically have periods at times where you stop everything and you say, okay, you know, how much do I have in the account, and what was my overhead, and figure it out roughly. But it's rough. It's the kind of thing that's very hard to do accurately. He says, therefore, that you should stipulate when you're taking on the minig of maaser, you should stipulate that you want to do it in a not precise manner. You want to that you're not accepting precise 10%, because it's very hard to get when you have that kind of budget. It's very hard to keep track of. Almost impossible. Okay, now in terms of deducting losses, so now a person can deduct his losses in business out of his profits to calculate his net, but it's only business-related losses. That includes losses from one deal to the next, right? If he has a good real estate deal against a bad real estate deal, you can deduct the losses of the bad one from the good one. It's even different businesses. So if he does a good real estate deal, but his stock profile goes down, so then he could deduct that also. Personal losses, he can't. So if he gets in a car accident or he loses his wallet, that cannot be deducted. Stock gains and losses are calculated when sold, when they're actualized. You don't calculate ups and downs on paper. Even when they're sold, if you're leaving your money in your investments, you intend to reinvest it, it's sitting around, it's also not out of the market. It's not considered out of the market. Well, yeah.
At the end of the year, a person had 7 stocks that they bought and sold throughout that year. So at the end of the 12-month period, they had a net gain of $100. If they intend to reinvest that money the following year, they would not have another maaser obligation.
Right. It's as far as the halacha is concerned, we treat it like it's still in the market. You're still playing with it. It's still in the business, right?
It doesn't have to have a 35 period?
No. It's not called a profit until you take it out for personal use. I think that's true. I think it's true about a business as well. The calculations of a year is from.
It's only based upon what you actually take as earnings.
Right.
No, but you do, that is earnings. You tell that to the IRS. When you sell the stock, whether you intend to reinvest it or not, you pay tax.
So I have in parentheses on my notes, even though the IRS might treat it differently. Yeah.
Is that the same thing for losses, though? Can I net a loss from last year against the gain from my next?
Well, no. So the Chavetz Chaim is telling you to have periods, and then because it'll go forever. He says you have to work. You should work within set periods and say, okay, whatever it is. But
that's what it is.
No, but not with things that are still invested. That's an ongoing venture.
Unrealized gains.
Yeah.
You don't have to pay that. Unrealized. You know, you bought it went up 5 times, but you didn't sell it.
If you sold it and you're planning on reinvesting it, it's halacha treats it like it's unrealized. The fact that it's not currently in a stock doesn't matter. It's in the business.
I think what you're saying, is within a time frame, so you can't have that time frame going forever. So you're saying at the end of the year, let's say your time frame is January to December 31st. At the end of the year, you had major gains, but you reinvested it during that year, and you didn't sell your new investments yet. You don't pay MICER on the gains.
If it stayed in the business, right? In other words, if I made your gains, I took them, then I decided to invest.
Separate a business. Separate. This is
investment.
Okay,
you.
I invest, right?
You invest.
So I got $100 10 years ago, and I put it in the stock market. I just never took it out. Just sitting there, the stock market went up, went down. So
no,
that's different.
That's an unrealized gain.
Right.
That's
no, but he's...
No, but let's say within the stock market, I bought it. It used to be Toys R Us, then I went to Kodak. It's all, right? So it was bought and sold, but it was all in that investing account. So then as long as I never took any money out, so I never have to get money.
So maybe another example, like I bought Israel bonds for $100 5 years ago, and I just got a check for $108. And it's actual check. I haven't cashed it yet. I really intend to believe Netter to reinvest it, but it's probably going to take me a few months to call them. I don't think I need to calculate Meister on that, because really I have the check, but I don't believe Netter. I'm not going to use it. I'm just going to put it back in.
I believe that's the case. That's how I understood.
But how do you define that? If, let's say, you're investing, all your examples are focusing on investing in stocks. So if you take the money in stocks, you decide to roll it into a bond.
Yeah.
Or let's say, instead of rolling it into a bond, you roll it into, you put it into a different business. You have your coffee house. So are we saying that it would make a difference if you first park the money in your personal account, and then in 3 days you decide to roll it into another investment?
Probably not. I mean, it depends what you're... I think profit is once you... Right.
That's what Jordan's saying.
What you're saying, if somebody has a brokerage account, as long as the money in the brokerage account and you're not using it for any personal use, you're not going to treat it as money.
For sure. If you take it out and you use some of it for groceries and you're thinking about reinvesting, you have to, I don't know, ask a row. Not sure. But
seems counterintuitive. That's different than... It's different than
tax law.
Well, no, I'm not just talking about tax law. Because then somebody should become a gazillionaire and never pay a penny of ICER.
If they're not, they're never going to pay a penny of ICER.
Just leave it in there
unless
and they work from a million to $10 million and never pay a penny.
But eventually he will.
Did he take any of it from
eventually?
Maybe not.
Maybe he never will.
They die before they benefit.
Somebody will.
His kids will pay Meister. When it comes out of the business, then Meister will be paid.
His children have Meister obligation to money that they inherit.
Yeah.
Even if the father already gave Meister from it.
Even if he already gave.
When you got a Yerusha.
So what's the halacha mechanism for deciding when something's now obligated to Meister?
I think your intention to leave it, to continue to use it for investment purposes, for profit purposes, or to use, I think. That's how I understood it.
You don't have to do anything to advance that?
I don't think so.
Are we saying perhaps that as long as it's in our hands, if I die yesterday, I'm saying that because I'm fine, but if I die yesterday, all my inheritance would go to my children, and because it changes hands, therefore it's income to them, it's constructive receipt or income to them, and they would have to essentially miser on that.
The whole thing they have to pay miser on that. The whole thing, not just the game.
It's all
the whole thing. The whole thing.
Yes,
yeah. That's a fact.
Even if you gave
miser on it already.
No, I'm saying that because I know that.
It's the same thing as if you wrote your child a check for $100.
They have to miser that.
They have to miser it.
Right. So therefore, if we're not misering on an investment account that constantly is rolling over, then at some point miser will be paid.
Right. For them, it's principal. If they choose to invest it, that's their choice. But it's all new principal. They have to pay on that.
It's got to be a time frame.
Yeah, I think what's coming out is there's a lot of different models, right? Because you have the model where you put something in, never look at it. You have a model where this is your whole business that you're constantly going back and forth and going from one thing to another. You have another model where you're putting in your own personal account, right? More like what you're talking about, right? Where it's going into your personal account, but you intend to. So it could be like you'd have to each one really would have to be examined. In that particular situation.
Okay, ask a Rav, but there...
That's something we could ask, right? Right?
Yeah, I mean, the situation might be different.
Okay, there's what to talk about if the money's staying...
It would be a time frame.
Maybe. That's what to ask. If it's sitting in a brokerage account, I mean, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's in an account called brokerage, but if the money is set aside to be reinvested, it's certainly what to ask about. Okay. Okay, now shareholders are not obligated in Meister for the corporation's profits until they get them as a dividend or as a payoff or whatever it is. Taxes. So now, Rav Moshe Feinstein differentiates between different types of taxes. He says that income tax is considered money that you never earned. It's like you're working for the government. I heard Scheinberg was stringent about that, but Ramesh is lenient that income tax is part of the cost of production, and therefore it's deducted from your profits. Social Security tax, he says, is also a business expense. Once you start receiving benefits, that's new money that you have to pay Maaser on. Voluntary IRA contributions, it's your money. You choose to stick it in your even if it goes straight to your retirement account, but that was your choice. It's your earned money, and you have to pay Maaser on that.
Not the contribution, the earnings on the contribution.
The contribution. It's earned money that you chose.
Oh, you're saying you can't deduct it.
Right. Cost of consumption, on the other hand, are personal expenses. So sales tax, even though you're not seeing direct obvious benefit from it, you pay for whatever you pay for. You get the shirt. On top of that, you're paying whatever percent sales tax is here. That's part of the cost of buying things, is paying sales tax. So you want to buy a shirt, pay the store this, and you pay the government that. That doesn't get deducted. Property tax, he says, is payment for the services that you get, including ones that you choose not to use. Public school, if you don't use it, you're paying for it, right? It's just they charge you for things, whether you use them or not. So you have to pay for that. It's a cost of consumption. It's part of it is that it's paying for the right to live there. You want to live here? This is what it costs. Take it or leave it. Okay. Interesting. If the home is an investment, or Moshe says, so then it becomes a business expense. The same property tax, if it's being spent as in order to have a property, it's like paying rent on a property for a business, and it's deducted. Rav Moshe says that you can, when you're calculating profit on real estate, you can take into account inflation. So I'm not going to get into the numbers with a room full of accountants, but go look. It goes into it anyway. So even if the property went up from $100,000 to $200,000 in the course of 10 years, but if inflation was 50%, that knocks off 50% of the net profit. I hope that makes sense. Monetary gifts that you receive need to be miser.
I interrupted
him. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sorry, just interrupting. But yeah, it's an interesting piece of information. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I heard from him. He didn't say the exact amount, but he said theoretically in Israel that you have a certain amount of your income tax and a certain amount of all your taxes could go to tzedakah. Or if your tax is going for welfare, right? So that's tzedakah. So he said if you could figure out the amount that's going towards tzedakah worthy causes, so then if you live in Israel, a certain amount of your taxes would be able to go to tzedakah.
Or New Jersey.
What?
No, or New Jersey.
Or New Jersey, perhaps. Yeah.
That's
what
it's
about.
Lakewood. Sorry.
Unless it's going to Palestinians to make commitment.
Okay. Non-monetary gifts are a little bit complicated. We'll get into that maybe. Yerusha. An inheritance on a non-monetary object. The consensus of poskim is not to take miser. Someone inherits like stuff, not money, but things. So then on that, it seems to be accepted for whatever reason not to give miser.
Movables or land?
Both. Now, if it's something that there's profit from, you give miser on the future profits. But the actual principle.
This is only an inheritance, not a gift.
I don't know about a gift, right?
No, I think if a person, if I give you a tie, you did not have the
fact
that
the
cost.
What if you give somebody
$100 you for sure.
Would you not give my sir on a gift of a
tie? What if you gave him a house?
We'll talk about it in a second.
Shall we cast it doesn't apply by multiples?
By Meiser? That's
not
the issue.
In Yerusha.
Here, there are those that say,
an inheritance. If you need to use the inheritance to settle the account of the person who died, you deduct that from the Meiser.
Discussion.
It's probably not a gain. It's not like it doesn't become your debt. You just didn't get it.
You inherited all the money.
Yeah.
And now you need.
You don't inherit. It's not like your debt. It's their debt. It's just the money you didn't get. It's just you're just.
It's too bad. Like you're using your money now to pay for it. Maybe
it would come out of those sources.
It's probably like you didn't get it. I don't know for sure, but it would strike me as being that you didn't get it.
Like giving an almana that has a claim against the estate, you have to pay her first before you get whatever.
That's the estate to pay off first.
So. I would imagine that's like you didn't get it. Okay, now. Now, in terms of gifts, non-monetary gifts, so many say, Rav Moshe Feinstein amongst them, that El Chazanish also, I think, that because it's only a minig, because it's only a minig, the minig was only on money. So even gifts, non-monetary gifts, you don't have to give ma'aser on according to those opinions. But there are those that argue, like we'll see in a second. The Sefer Tzedakah Mishpat says that interesting thing. It depends. If it's something that you were going to buy anyway, then and now you don't have to, you should give ma'aser of the value of the net value of the thing that you got, because it's an increase in your net worth. That's how you should look at it. If it's something you would never buy,
exactly the same item. If I would have bought a tie, but it would have been less expensive.
Oh, that's a good shayla. I don't know. It's a good shayla. Not sure. If it's something you never would have bought, who knows what? Something you don't have to give my sign. But it's something you would have bought. So now that's money that I would have spent, was going to spend, and now I'm not spending it. You should. He says you should, but you can ask a rabbi, because there's what to rely on. Stucco mishpat. I'm mentioning it because it's interesting, not because it's halacha. Or Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish said not to. That you don't have to. Okay. Now, what if monetary gifts, but they're given for a specific purpose? Someone says, here's whatever, to do whatever. So some say, right, that you don't have to give ma'aser, that's the giver didn't want, right? I think you told me that also. Many places can say it. Okay. Chaim Kanievsky quotes the Chazon Ish, who's machmer. I'm just, again, mentioning it because it's interesting. The Chazon Ish, just for the logic of it, halacha, you don't have to. Chaim Kanievsky quotes the Chazon Ish, who said you should give, because the giver doesn't mind if you use money, some of it for tzedakah. When someone gives you, here's $500, buy svarim, happy birthday, they don't really care if you give $50 to tzedakah instead of buying svarim, usually. That was his logic. He says if through giving ma'aser you wouldn't be able to fulfill the what they want you to do with it. Let's say here's X dollars to buy a car, and the car costs that much. So then he says you should buy the car, and you should wait. And when you have liquid assets, you should give it then. But again, halacha, you don't have to give on a gift if the giver's intent was, assuming the giver's intent is that you use it for yourself. He wasn't thinking you should use it for ma'aser. Okay. If someone pays your bills for you, okay, so what about that? I would have had a bill and someone paid it off for me. So there are those that say that that's called mavriach ari. It's a concept in halacha where I'm just removing something that would have taken money away from you. I'm not giving you money, and you don't have to. That's not called profit. Shlomo Zalman was machmir. He says that that's called profit.
Wouldn't that sort of be inconsistent with allowing people to deduct business losses from their income?
That's why. Deducting business loss is calculating I'm only paying on profit. That's not called my businesses as a whole didn't profit.
Recognizing the debt as being something more than just the chance of an ari coming or a loss of being an ari coming. Right?
Well, it's not a loss. It's what would have been a loss and that never came. Right?
Okay.
now, if an institution owes somebody money and they pay, let's say they owe an employee money and they pay off their bills instead, they pay for their health insurance, they pay for their tuition. So if, Shlomo Zalman said that if it's paid off in lieu of their salary, in other words, really your salary should be X, instead we're paying you less cash and you're paying for your health insurance or we'll pay your tuition, so that's the same thing as you got cash. You got it. Instead of giving it to you, they gave it to there instead. That's money that you've earned, and you have to pay. The Gemara says that this is in the sources that parents have an obligation to support their children, but there's different sources that may only be till they're 6 years old. Rashi says somewhere. The Gemara says that when they're older than six, that there's a pasuk that says Shomri Mishpat Osei Tzedakah B'chol Eis, that people who do tzedakah constantly. The Gemara says, who's doing tzedakah constantly? The Gemara says that's referring to parents who support their children after the age of six, according to Rashi. So the pasuk, the Gemara calls somebody who supports their children after six as doing tzedakah. So the Shach quotes the Marami Rutenberg as taking that very literally and says, it's ma'aser. You can use ma'aser for supporting your kids after the age of six because the Gemara calls it tzedakah. The Taz argues, he says, how in the world is it possible that you're going to call it tzedakah to support your kids? And it can't be. But the poskim, some poskim say that if the circumstances are pressing, things are hard, you can maybe rely on the lenient opinion that can be considered tzedakah and deducted from ma'aser. Now, it seems to be that everyone agrees that supporting children after whatever is the obligation ends is, right? So after six, maybe the Gemara calls it stucco, but there's still some degree of obligation. Once there's no obligation to support your children, if you continue to do so, that for sure can be deducted from stucco if they're aniyim. That depends on societal norms. So some poskim say that after high school already, there is room for leniency to use Meiser for supporting kids. Now, tuition. So now, Meiser can't it's not so easy to use Meiser for tuition because a parent has an obligation. This goes into the rules of fulfilling your existing obligations through tzedakah. Parent has an obligation to teach their sons and daughters, to teach their sons and daughters. The sons, interestingly, is because you have a mitzvah to teach your sons Torah. Girls, the obligation to pay for an education for girls is to protect them from outside influences. So there's no halacha to teach them Torah, but you're considered obligated to put them in a good environment, because if you don't, that's bad news. Okay, that's an interesting point. Now, the father's obligation to educate his son Torah is a Torah Shebiksav. On Torah Shebal Peh, there's more leniency. So as soon as they're past the point of learning, when they're starting to learn Mishnayos and things like, once they know Torah Shebiksav, I don't know when that is, it hasn't happened for me yet, but once they know Torah Shebiksav, so I don't know how long the father's obligation goes for that, but in terms of when you're paying for Torah Shebal Peh, when you're sending them to yeshiva, there's already room for leniency.
It goes by when they know how to learn it by themselves.
So that's an important point. That's only till they can learn independently, right? So once they're able to do that, which we mentioned this morning, you know, many of the children in this community are very well capable of doing that. There's a lot more room to use Meiser for that. Moshe said that like a girl going to seminary after high school is not an obligation. Much more flexible to use Meiser if needed. The stucco mishpah points out that's not going to help for the room and board, right? When you're paying tuition, obviously some of that's going to pay for the cost of educating them, but some of it's going to room and board. He, and maybe could ask Shaila, maybe there's room for flexibility on this, I don't know. He says that room and board wouldn't apply. Maybe you should deduct, you have to figure out if you deduct the actual cost or deduct what it would have cost you at home. Deduct what it would have cost you at home to room and board.
But you don't have an obligation to support them at that point anyway.
Depends what age.
I mean, they're 18 when they go to seminary.
Okay, it's not... The societal norm may be to support them. So after high school, there's room for leniency, but fact is, it's a leniency. Most people do support their children. After 12... What? Yeah, right.
If you're saying that for seminary,
yeah,
right, there's really no obligation whatsoever. So you could, for the Torah study of seminary, you could use Meiser.
Right.
So why would that be any difference for the board at that age also? In other words, either you're obligated to take care of them or not obligated.
Well, one is the obligation to take care of them. One is the obligation to educate them. So your obligation to educate them has stopped. So what you pay now for education is above and beyond.
But you're taking additional, there's additional expense. It's cost more to pay for them to live somewhere else than it does to have them live in your house, because you're already paying for your house. You're already keeping it cool and warm and lighted and everything else.
Right. So I don't know for sure, you could ask a Rav, but I'm wondering if the additional expense is part of the cost of education. The only way they can get this education is if I pay that additional expense. What I would have paid at home for room and board, that I would do anyway. Anything I pay above and beyond that is part of the cost of educating them.
People come to me and do it case by case. It really depends. You know, if this is a service and they're doing you a really big favor by taking your daughter, you know, and you'd have paid someone $1 million to do that, then you took that upon yourself, and you have to, that's a debt that you owe to somebody. But sometimes it's like a super mitzvah that you're doing. I wouldn't send my daughter to Eretz Yisrael. You know, I'd have her out working, and I wouldn't be sending her. And this is a mitzvah I'm doing that I'm going to take her and I'm going to support her for another year. So then it'd be different. You know, it's really case by case.
Boys, don't send your daughter.
Have no intention.
I understand why it's different from the societal norm of supporting your children as, you know, as they are getting older.
But that's why it's case by case. I mean, what's the societal norm?
To go to seminary.
My daughter doesn't know that.
I don't know. The societal norm requires you to support them in a basic level of sustenance, not to send them to seminary. You're not mechuyev. No one's going to tell you mechuyev to send your kid to seminary, right?
No one's going to tell you you're mechuyev
to feed your kids,
after 18 years old. You're chayev. Why are you chayev?
You might be.
Who's going to tell you that?
because people are going to think you're a pretty horrible person if you just let your kids starve.
Okay, and you say
seminary is not the case.
I'm not bringing you to seminary.
A lot of people don't send their girls to seminary.
They never go to seminary in New York or Lakewood or somewhere local.
Or they get a job.
Either they do or they don't, but we're talking. A lot of them don't, and in sending to Eretz Yisrael for sure not. Okay, moving along. If parent, let's say people who pay full, a lot apparently when you pay full tuition, sometimes that's actually above and beyond the actual cost of the education, and it's subsidizing the other students who are not paying full tuition. If you could figure that out, that difference can be called meiser. Even though the IRS doesn't consider that a charitable contribution, but it's considered meiser if that's what's going on. So two, they say that if the tuition committee assesses your ability to pay a certain amount and you genuinely believe that you can't, that's above what you actually can afford, anything beyond what you genuinely can afford is considered meiser.
Even if it's only going for your kid's education?
Yeah, because I think the argument is that I don't really owe that. They just made a mistake. No, they you owe them what you can afford. They just over assessed you.
Just to be very honest.
No, but yeah. if every penny that I'm giving them for his tuition, so if they would have given me a break on my tuition, that's a separate judgment. They decided not to give me a break. If every cent that I'm paying is still going towards my kid's education, which I'm chayiv in, how does that count towards my sir?
I don't know. I'm not sure I had the same problem, but I had the same problem. Not sure. It might depend on what they're not learning in the absence of the tutor. If they're learning, if you're fulfilling your obligation and what you're doing is above beyond your obligation, that would be different than if you're just hiring a tutor to meet your obligation. Does that make sense? I don't know. Ask her off.
Usually not. Yes, but usually a tutor wouldn't compromise.
Okay, yeah. Now, raffle tickets. Right, raffle tickets can use Meiser money to buy because really you just want to give the institution. The raffle ticket, you know, is a nice thing, but really when you're giving the money, it's because you want to give money to the institution, assuming that's the case. If that's the case.
Does it change when you win?
Yeah, we'll get there. Right? We'll get there. You know, if you're mamish like I want the raffle ticket, you don't care about the institution, then not. But if you want to get the institution, the raffle is maybe a little bit of a push for you. So then you can use Meiser for that. Now if he wins, or Meiser says that you should reimburse the cost of the ticket plus the 10% of the profit from the winnings should go back to the institution that you got it from. We'll get back to that though. Meiser, now paying off your Meiser debt, right? You're giving your Meiser. So obviously you pay money, give money to tzedakah, that's obvious. It could also be paid with objects or services assessed at their normal commercial value. So someone who performs a service can perform their service and deduct the value of that service that they normally charge minus the 10% that they would normally, that they would have had to give to Meiser had they charged for that service, towards their Meiser. There is a machlokas if services can be counted if the person would not have otherwise been occupied. I mean, it would have been hired by somebody else, instead I did this, that's for sure. If not, then it's a machlokas, but again, probably could be lenient. And the same is true if someone provides a discount for items, services, or rent, right? If somebody sells whatever they sell, and they sell it to somebody who's poor out of desire to help them at a discount, they can deduct that as well. If somebody rents somebody an apartment and they charge them less than they would normally charge because to help them out, that counts as well. Okay, let's get to some practical cases. Let's say there's two stores in town, right? One is cheaper, one costs more, or there's two. True story, there was two sofrim. One's cheaper, one's more expensive, writing a Sefer Torah. And you go to the more expensive one, so who's a person who's poor, can you deduct Meiser?
Is that your intent?
Okay, good.
You go in there because he's poor?
Okay, that's excellent.
Better sofrim.
Excellent. Number one, that's the point. Yeah, first of all, it's got to be you're going because he's poor. That's got to be your plan. You go in there to help him out. You have to know that ahead of time. Right? Okay, so I think we more or less hit it.
Right, if, more expensive.
By the way, when you say, you deduct just the difference in cost, not the whole. And
excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Right, there you go. Right, you can deduct whatever you pay above and beyond the other one because you want to help out the person who's poor. So then... So then that's deductible from ICER. What?
The
difference, yeah.
If you have one tutor costs $10, one tutor costs $50, but you want to help out the $50 one,
right,
then also it could take $40 from ICER.
Right. Assuming it's just because of that, right?
What?
You want it because he's better.
Right.
Okay, fine. Next. Somebody travels on business, and when he's traveling on business, he has to eat out, and it's expensive. So can he deduct that from his profits? The eating out, the money he spends eating out.
You have to eat at home too.
Excellent. Okay.
It's his own business or he's working for someone?
Well, he's not getting reimbursed. That's coming out of his pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh? Not?
So whatever extra comes out, then you would spend eating at home.
Some say it just is. It's a business expense finished. But others say... Others say the difference. What?
IRS, I already deduct only 50% of your meals and costs.
Okay. So others say the difference. You have to eat at home, so that you deduct. But anything you're spending above and beyond what you'd eat at home is a business. The same is true for nicer clothing, a nicer car. If you buy something you would buy for yourself anyway, but you get nicer things because you need to look a certain way and present a certain image or need to be able to get to your business without breaking down, and you wouldn't do that otherwise, so then the difference between what you would have done otherwise and what you spent extra because of the business need is all deductible. Okay, what if a woman hires domestic help in order to allow her to work? She wants to be able to work. If she's going to work, someone's got to take care of things around the house. She won't have time, so she hires somebody to help out.
Business expense.
Okay, so it depends. The things... It's basically, it's a business expense. Babysitter, same thing. The difference is, that one point of note, is that if the person does things that she would have not done on her own, or she would have spent money on, let's say now that she's there, she irons their shirts, and you save money on dry cleaning, so then that you would have spent anyway. You have to take that out of the cheshbon. That's the money that you're saving is your money, right? It's only the net expense that's purely for business purposes.
Yeah, it's usually that's not part of the how they figure out the expense.
Okay, it depends what it is. Depends what it is, right?
You have and to. It's not like making a separate charge for ironing the shirts.
If she's there, usually they charge hourly. If it's an extra hour of work, it's an extra hour of pay. Okay, right? Okay, mortgage payments on a house.
It would just be like the property tax going through much. It depends on if it's a house to live in or if it's...
Right. So excellent. So cost of consumption, part of owning a house is the interest and whatnot paid on a mortgage. Interesting that if the home... says if the home appreciates in value over the course of your ownership and you sell it at a profit, I think somebody quotes somebody saying that now retroactively the home becomes a business, and that you can deduct all of the fees that he talks about the interest on the loan, but maybe the property would be the taxes would be the same. It becomes a business now. There's a profit, and you can deduct all of that from that profit. All the expenses that went into owning the house can be deducted from the profit that he gains from the sale.
What if you sell it at a loss?
Then there's no maximum to begin with.
Can it be deducted from other gains?
Stop it.
I don't know. It's my question.
Find a new business.
Yeah. No. This is the house that you lived in.
I think it could be deducted from other gains. If within that year, a person earned $100,000, but they sold their house and lost $50,000, their net gain there is $50,000.
Right. And that sounds very reasonable. I didn't see that explicitly, but it sounds very reasonable.
But if that's a person, if that's not a cost of doing business, that's my own personal loss. Right. Why is any different than me getting into an accident?
That's what we were saying before. It depends on the structure.
I think
we're talking about a personal house.
My understanding is that nowadays, halacha looks at almost every person like an investor. In other words, even if the person is not, it is their primary residence, but a lot of people, that's a means of income for them. If they refinance, they do different, in other words, it's,
everyone in a certain way is an investor. Everyone owns a stock or.
Sounds very reasonable. A house is, in many ways, an investment.
Why is it different than a car in an accident? Which we said that is not is a personal loss.
People who have a car, you know, thinking that they're going to make money on it. People who have a car, you know, just to live in it. Even when you buy your house to live in, you certainly hope that when it's time to sell, you'll actually make some money on it. And when you, you know,
I think if your house burns down, it wouldn't count. The point is that if your house burned down, it wouldn't count. The point is that it depreciated in value. If your car depreciated in value, it might be the same thing.
if I buy stuff for the buy ingredients for the peanut bake sale, right? And then the eggs break. So it was an investment, right? I was hoping I'll buy $5 of ingredients and sell a $15 pie, right? But, I mean, what I'm telling you is I think this is taking it too far. What's the difference between a pie and a house? I'm like, what's the no seriously?
My understanding is that at least when I bought my house in Baltimore, certainly, I'm living in it. I want to live in it. I want to use it well while I'm living in it. But when it's time to sell,
when it's time to move to Norfolk.
Yeah, just saying societal norms. Societal norms.
Societal norms is that everyone is effectively an investor in something. So therefore, the halacha they put themselves as an investor.
Okay.
If I was selling my house in Baltimore for a loss, I would definitely not,
There's no meister there.
What?
There's no meister.
No question is if you could deduct it.
But does it reduce his obligation for meister
robbery? I wouldn't have looked back and said, oh, I lost the money, but, I lived in the house. It's a loss.
I think people do look at it as a loss. Right.
So I think it gave the same thing.
Okay. Okay. It's a good shaila. Okay, now someone asked Ramesha this question that was in the sources. He said, if I pay less taxes because I gave money to tzedakah, does that money belong to tzedakah? I give money to tzedakah, that's a deduction on the IRS views it as a deduction, it reduces my tax debt.
It would never end.
Huh?
It would never end.
Yeah. Which?
That calculation would never end.
Okay.
Because you'd owe more miser for the deduction that you got, and then you'd owe more, then you get more back because you've given more tzedakah, and it's diminishing returns. It would get smaller, but the calculation.
The guy asking the shiloh was looking for a niche business for accountants.
Anyway, he says no way. He says your money. It's a legal mechanism by which you reduce the amount they charge you, and it's your money. It's not tzedakah's money. They asked Shlomo Zalman a bunch of questions, some of them. He says, if someone in Kollel, this happens, eats in yeshiva, eats lunch in yeshiva instead of going home, and he saves $1,000 over the course of the year by not going home for lunch. So does he owe that savings to Meiser? And he said, what do you think?
You just have to give Meiser off
$1,000.
I hope not.
He says no. Okay. He said, what if somebody pays a couple's rent for them? The parents pay their rent. They have to pay what it would have cost, what the rent should have cost them in Meiser.
You said earlier, somebody pays your bills.
Right. So Shlomo Zalman said there, that's where he's arguing. He said they do have to pay Meiser. But as we mentioned, many poskim hold that you don't pay. It's considered mevriachari. Okay. He said the same thing. If, let's say, the owner of the apartment lets them live there for free, whoever it is. Parent, grandparent, whoever, somebody lets them stay in the apartment for free. If there's a normal going rent rate that you pay, normally people pay whatever, $1,000 a month, $2,000 a month rent here.
Is there a difference between paying somebody's expenses and paying off their debt? I owe $1,000 on a credit card, so Shalom gives me $1,000 to pay for that. I need $1,000 to pay rent to buy food, and Mr. Zelikovich gives me that. Is that the same?
Food might be different, but it's existing debt, a bill. Yeah, I don't.
In either case, you received $1,000.
Well, here you know that they're coming after you to take your money, and they gave the money and say, here, stay off, right? They pay the gas company, they pay the electric company. Leave Danziger alone.
No, but you got the benefit.
Right, but so there is a halachic concept of Mavriach Ari, it's like chasing away a lion that's chasing you. That I didn't give you anything. I just stopped them from taking something from you.
Was the person who had the debt, was his intention to pay you, just going to pay it a little bit later?
or was he going to walk away and not pay?
Well, no, but I mean, doesn't the
IRS
consider somebody forgiveness of debt is considered
income? You don't give it to him, you pay it off.
You don't expect that.
I think it's going to be.
What?
You could always get it.
What?
As opposed to if somebody paid
$100
rent,
and I use it for
myself, that's not going to be considered.
They don't give it to you. They pay straight to the. They just pay off the chayv, right? Not a gift. That's something. I mean, that goes into gifts, but they pay off the debt, right? The person you should owe rent. And they send a check to the person, or they tell you, forget it, don't pay. So again, if Shlomo Zalman holds, you pay Meister, and then others say you don't pay, when it's just chasing away the debt.
But if you don't pay, then you could arrange a mechanism that you never pay Meister then. You'd always just take it as a loan, and then have somebody else come into it and pay it off. Instead of me paying your rent for the coming
gifts?
Month, I'll just pay it for the prior month.
Yeah, right. Because it's a debt after it becomes due.
What,
due date
as for gifts, for gifts. I mean, for salary, if they're doing that in lieu of payment, that's then we said that's already like they gave you money, right?
I don't know if it is for an ongoing. It's like I was saying with Gary, it's payment of forgiveness of debt by whatever entity forgives that debt is considered income for the IRS, whereas paying my rent for 2 months is
a gift. The IRS doesn't mean anything here.
Right. Okay, now if a company pays for an employee's health insurance, so whether that is something that the value of that they have to pay Meiser on. So Shlomo Zalman said, I think it was him, that it depends if they would have bought it otherwise. If it's something that they would have gotten and now it's being paid for, that's in lieu, I guess it's in lieu of a salary. If it's
not a choice anymore, isn't it the law you have to have insurance?
Or
that might change things.
Well,
not really, you could pay a canast. What he would have gotten. Okay, yeah, right. Rather free. Right, you have to figure that out. Right.
It also depends on if it came out of the salary. Came out of the salary, for sure.
Maybe not if you don't want it. If you wouldn't have gotten it and you weren't given a choice, maybe not. Ask a Rav. Okay, now, here we have this case. This is a good one. So we spoke about, this is a true story. I mentioned that. Here's a true story. Somebody bought a Chinese raffle ticket, and they want an apartment in Eretz Yisrael. And then the organization found out that he bought the ticket with Meiser money. So they said, okay, it's our apartment. You use Meiser money. It was our money. It's not your money. It's our money. It's Stucco money. You can't use it for yourself, so you win the apartment. It's our apartment, right? So, yeah, what do you say?
Don't give
him any more
money.
Yeah, so we said...
Why isn't that organization's money?
Because you gave them... When you gave that money...
You give a gift, you cannot have any... You can't have a tangible benefit. It has to be intangible.
Right.
So therefore, if it's Meister money, it's a gift, and therefore, it's owned.
You can't buy yourself a ticket. You must give them the money. You bought them a ticket.
IRS-wise, you didn't buy the raffle ticket, right?
You didn't buy them
according
the
IRS. You gave a donation, and then you got a ticket.
That's how it works?
This is interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
I don't
know. I understand.
She couldn't demand it.
You
couldn't give myself to anybody.
Yeah, no,
but you didn't. But I gave it to them.
You took, even if it's much, okay, when people buy a raffle ticket, they really don't expect to win. Okay,
I do. Yeah.
but they use Meiser money. The fact that the person won, so that now that person just got a $100,000 house, he pays Meiser on that.
Right.
What is the organization claiming?
Right. What they were saying is that when you buy,
the organization is saying because you use Meiser, therefore it's not right here.
Right. Right. Right.
So the organization was saying in this case, they were saying that.
Your answer before.
What was the story?
I don't know what happened, but it's a machlokes ha'poskim how that works. Again, I mentioned earlier that you could use Meiser money, but there are those that argue and say that you can't. And I'm just wondering, I don't know what happened in that story, but when there's a machlekes in halacha, there's a concept called kimli, where in certain situations you could say, like, I know there's different opinions. I hold like the lenient opinion or whatever the case may be. You can do that. So here, they're in possession. They have possession, right? They own the apartment. You're trying to get the apartment from them. So I don't know why they couldn't say, I hold like, I mean, I know why they I mean, it will sink the organization. But before that, right, they could say, I hold like the opinion that says, I don't owe you the apartment, and you good luck. You can't say, well, Puss can say like this and like that, and you owe me the apartment. I hold like the other opinion, and you can't. I don't know what happened in the end, but...
why is it relevant that the person had the right to use Meiser or not? Either way, he chose to spend his Meiser and put it in the rental.
If you use Meiser, according to that opinion, it's the pshat that you gave them the ticket. You bought a ticket for them because you meant to give it to them.
I don't understand how that's a pshat.
Meiser, if you say that Meiser has to be given without any strings attached, right? So when you bought the raffle ticket with Meiser, if that inherently means that you're buying, that you're giving it to them, that means the ticket that results from that is also theirs.
Didn't you also say all it means is that you can't subtract it from your Meiser?
That's a different opinion. Oh.
So either way,
no.
His money. Not necessarily.
If you buy yourself tefillin, so then by definition, you haven't given Meiser. That's what happened.
Is it like you gave $100,000
to Meiser
now?
I don't know. But no, it's theirs.
So all that happens is it doesn't subtract from his Meiser.
Not necessarily. Here it's worse. Because here, you gave it to Tztaka. You're trying to say, I took Meiser money and used it to buy something instead of Tztaka. And they're saying, no, you didn't. You gave it to Tztaka. Right? Well, by tefillin, you can't say...
Why is something taken in exchange? This is the Tovus Anah. This one gets an exchange.
It's more than Tovus Hanah. You're buying something.
That's not Tovus Hanah. That's not Tovus Hanah. That's an exchange of goods. No, Tovus Hanah is
you're saying it's not attached one to the other.
Who gets the Meiser?
I'm saying the way it works is when you.
If this is when I buy the ticket, it's an exchange of goods. So I bought a ticket. So if it's a Meiser.
Okay, so they're arguing that's not what happens.
We don't care about the IRS.
They're saying that you're buying a ticket with Meiser money.
Yes.
That's what they're saying.
Took Meiser money and they get a little piece of paper.
According to the IRS, that's what happens also.
IRS says if you give a raffle ticket, it's gambling. You win, you pay tax and you lose.
No, but we're not talking about paying Meiser on the winnings.
When I steal that ticket, did I steal a dollar or did I steal a
raffle ticket? By law, it's not taxed adultery.
That's not what we're talking about.
Well,
no, we're not talking about that.
We want to know who owns the house.
We want to know who owns the house.
What's the question?
Not what's the Meiser. If we follow
what's the question?
After it won, before it won.
Charity. Yeah, what about that?
What's the question?
Does it say that? It depends. No, if you won, they won though. You said they're claiming you bought us a ticket. If you used your own money and bought a ticket, you won. You bought us a ticket. You used our money. What if the guy went in the Pushka, took out Meiser? He gave it to them.
He gave it to them.
He gave them the Meiser.
I understand.
No, so he bought them a ticket.
He bought it for them. If I go and buy a ticket for you, and that ticket wins, I have no right to claim the apartment. Right?
He took Meiser, then he could do what he wants. So he says, I'm giving this Meiser to you. Here's the money. And they hand him a ticket. He gave it to
the ticket back.
If you bought a raffle ticket,
they're
and I stole it
it's
from
not.
You, and it won. Did I steal a dollar or did I steal $100,000?
They won the raffle. Why should they redo it?
How much
it's like,
do I owe you?
It's like someone gave them money and they bought a ticket. Why?
If you bought a raffle
yes,
ticket
can.
For $1.
Yes, you can.
On a $100,000 raffle.
For, of course you can.
And I stole your ticket and the next day we find
really?
Out that ticket won. Yeah. Do I owe you $1 or do I owe you $100,000? Okay, so the same thing here. So I bought the ticket for the organization. According to the opinion that I can't. No, so it's the same parallel.
All right, fine. That was interesting. Moving along. All right. Now, if somebody lent money to somebody poor, and the person reneges on the debt, okay? And now the person wants to write off the debt and deduct it from Meiser. He lent money, and the guy disappears, whatever. Disappears, that wouldn't work. But
he wants to be meichel the debt and count it as tztaka, or he just wants to deduct it as a loss?
No, not a loss, tztaka. He wants
poor, the guy he lent it to is poor?
Yeah.
Wait, one more time.
Someone lent a poor person money, and the poor person is unable to pay. and the person wants to write off the debt and deduct and consider the whole value of the loan a donation to a poor person.
That wasn't his intent.
That was not. If it was, even on condition, then he's good. Excellent. Says in Noda Behuda that after the fact, there's three conditions. First of all, he has to get permission from the guy to count it that way. He has to tell him, I would like to write it off as tzedakah, and the guy has to accept it. It's like giving tzedakah.
Can you assume he'll be okay with that?
No. His dignity is at stake. He doesn't want to take tzedakah. He'd rather just default on a loan than take tzedakah. I think that probably happens more than you think.
Kinesky, yeah. He had a double issue. He said, first, are you allowed to do that, right? No, if I forgive a debt, right, is that tzedakah, A? Then he said, what about this guy, right? He's going to come to Shmaya after 120 years. He never paid his debt. So does me forgiving it, does that elastically help? So Chaim Kanievsky actually, I think he does this on a regular basis, don't tell people borrowing money, that he actually goes to another person, and he says, look, here's $500. I'm using this to pay off X's debt. And then they go and they give it back to him, like as if it was a credit card. And it actually goes through the motion of paying off the debt.
Really?
Yes, so he's actually taking money, paying off the debt, and then that's how he does it.
Very interesting. That helps for my sake?
He didn't do it for my sake. I think it helps for my sake, but he did it because he said, otherwise the guy never paid. In other words, you think you were Muslim, you did him a big favor, not necessarily, because he's going to come to Shemaya after 120 years.
Why can't you be mindful of that?
What?
Why can't you be mindful of that?
He said, because from his perspective, it's not, the guy accepted himself, he's going to pay back, and the fact that I was Muslim is not good enough. He said he has to actually pay it back, or someone has to pay it back for him.
Because he still thinks he's doing it there.
What?
He
I don't even know if that's good thinking. It could be the mechanism. In other words, you don't want to come up to heaven having debts unpaid. That should be someone actually paying for it.
Why would Mechila not extinguish the debt?
What?
Why would Mechila not extinguish the debt?
That's what he asked.
It's not based on the Rashi that because they thought by Shavua. And she thinks she's doing a chait.
How would it help if he pays it off and the whole time the guy tomorrow?
Right.
Okay, I'm just telling the story.
Let's say you loan an organization, not a person, loan an organization money, and then you muffle the debt. And the exchange bank account that's stuck, and they agree to do that. They're happy to do that.
I imagine the guidelines would be the same, but there's more rules. One is that you decide to do that and you tell them and they accept that. Another one is that it has to be a person. Basically, the next two rules are that it has to be a person that you normally would give to and an amount, a sum that you would normally give to. If this is something that you'd never give as miser, and all of a sudden you're just doing it because it's lost anyway, so I might as well write it off my miser, it doesn't count. It's got to be something that would be in the realm of normal for who and what you're giving. And that they accept it as such. Okay, next case. Let's say a merchant, the guy has a store, and he lets a poor customer take an item for free, let's say, from the store. What does he deduct from his meister debt? Let's say,
cost of the goods
or
what it would cost. That's the question.
Right.
He sold it anyway?
Yeah.
And he would have made a profit.
Right.
Certainly,
at
least
cost
him.
Right, whatever it cost him.
Right.
The sales price.
So it's really the sales price. Let's say the item cost him $100 to buy, but he normally sells it for $200, so it's $190 because there's $90 profit $100 profit on which he would have paid 10% meiser anyway. So that doesn't count. So it's a total deduction of $190. That was Rav Shlomo Zalman made that cheshbon. They asked the stipler the following question. I guess at the time, maybe it's still the case, if you work for Chinuch Atzmai Education Network, so part of the deal was that you have to volunteer 2 hours a week, volunteer teaching beyond whatever your normal job is, 2 hours a week. So they asked Rosh Hashanah, they asked Stipler rather, if you can deduct that time as Meiser.
From what?
Your Meiser Chiyuvim.
Your salary value or his lower school
your what? Teacher value, whatever the value is, whatever the going rate for that is, right? You want to deduct it from your obligations to Meiser. I owe whatever. This is a payment of my Meiser, my 2 hours a week of volunteer time.
We said that earlier. You can give services as well. So
right.
That's what it is.
Okay. Anybody else?
But at what cost?
Could he have made money at that point?
Teacher's cost, he said.
This is my focus, whether you need
depends
that, but yeah,
if you are
the teaching has a value.
Saying if you're the janitor and you decide to teach and you don't know how to, you can't charge a full teacher's salary.
Okay.
So I go and volunteer, or now my wife goes and volunteers at bingo.
Right. That's a very good question. Let's see.
It's an obligation. No, let's say, right. Mrs. Aronoff goes and volunteers, right? So it's a $40 value. That's $40 money, for sure. Now, you might say some of the parents in the school might be different because they sign that they have an obligation, right?
Right.
It's a little different. But if someone has an obligation, they're just volunteering, for sure.
You said earlier, though, certain things you have to pay, otherwise you can't have that thing.
Excellent. So that's what the stipler said. Stipler said. He's saying the stipler said that Ramostowski said they're like the same person almost, but the stipler said the stipler said that they signed on their contract they're going to do it, so it's really like they agreed to work 26 hours for 24 hours worth of pay. It's not really volunteer. It's just another name for working more for no money. but
that would be bingo also.
Mm-hmm. For a parent,
for a parent in the school, that would be the same thing.
Right. 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 And it's all, and it's what you have to do to get a job. Fine.
Are they responsible for making you sign something that's not really fair?
You don't have to sign it. Oh, bingo! You don't mean the teachers in Chinuch Atzmai. Oh, you mean bingo?
I mean,
I've got the next board
in a different community where they have bingo.
Right. I'm not going to take a stance on that. Okay. I'm kidding. I think it's fair. All right. Children before bar mitzvah get gifts of money. So now they asked Reb Shlomo Zalman when he turns 13, is he obligated in Meister on the money he received as a child? Huh?
Absolutely. Why? But he got it when he was a kid. He's not obligated in anything.
Good.
What do you mean, before his bar mitzvah?
He got the money before his bar mitzvah.
Did he own that before his bar mitzvah?
Yes, good. He owns it.
What's the intent?
Also good? Everyone's good. Okay, so Shlomo Zalman said, absolutely. Why not? Right? Rabbi Yashiv, they quote as saying that he's not obligated. Shlomo Zalman said, absolutely. Rabbi Yashiv said not, like Shmuel Yitzchak and saying that it's not his money. Money that's given to a child before bar mitzvah, even after bar mitzvah, as long as he's financially dependent on his father, the money belongs to his father.
But that's no. So either the father would have to pay maaser because it's a gift to him, or generally, I think the kavana of the person giving the gift is that it's he's giving it to the kid, and that the father can't use it. If that's the case, then according to halacha, it does belong to the kid.
Right, so I don't think Reb Chaim Kanievsky said it's not the general intent of a parent of a gift to a child. People generally give money to a child, assuming the father will take care of it.
So right. Then the father's mechuyav to give meiser.
So Reb Chaim said still the father's not obligated to give meiser because the person giving the money intent was that they not give meiser. He wants them to use the money. He doesn't want them to use meiser.
So that's every gift.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so can I ask you just say...
Well, I don't know every gift. Every gift to a child is different. Maybe when you give money to an adult, you understand that they use it for these things. People don't give money to a child. Generally, if you give money to a child, assuming they'll give meiser, maybe it's different. Ein Shum. Okay, now here's a great case. This is great. Somebody lost money. I heard this as a true story. I'm not sure it happened as a true story. Yes. Somebody lost a lot of money lost the money. They had cash and they lost it. They left it in a taxi, whatever it was. And there was no simon on the money, a large sum of money. Somebody found the money. Halacha is you can keep it, right? Then they found out who the owner was. The way I heard it, the person mamish was like dying from his loss. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, you buy apartments for cash for some reason. I mean, I know what. But and the guy's walking around with you know, tons of money. That's how I heard it. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash. That might be hard because maybe there's a sim in there, but assuming not. And he said, okay, you know, this guy's in distress. Like, I'm not going to keep it. There's an idea in the Gemara already of Lifnim Mishuras Adin going above and beyond the letter of the law to return a lost object even without a sim in. And he gives back the money. $100,000, whatever it is. And found it, finds out who it belongs to, gives it back. Okay. Very nice, big size. Does he have to give meiser on it? Yeah?
Why is not the whole thing meiser?
It's a loss.
Why is not the whole thing meiser?
He's Jacob's investor.
Maybe he's not poor.
Oh, the guy's not poor.
Maybe.
What
is meiser on? On the $100,000 that he found.
I made $100,000.
Because it was after?
Sure, he's saying the guy. He was his.
Yeah.
The finder has to pay
Meiser. He gained $100,000. He chose to give it back to the guy who was nice
to
him.
He gave it to
Not necessarily.
Not if the guy's not poor.
The guy's dying.
What if the guy's not poor?
The guy's dying. The guy's poor.
Maybe not.
Let's say not.
He didn't care
that much about the money and he wasn't dying.
Huh?
He saved his life.
I'm dying. The guy was distraught. He was agitated. There's a halachal if Nimishur Sadin to give back a mitzvah without a siman.
Did he pay Meiser when he found the money?
That's what we're asking.
Not yet. He found the money. Within a few hours, word got out that somebody left $10,000 in Machane Yehuda. He didn't give it at all. The shaila is, does he have to now? Even after he gave it back, does he have to give now?
He wouldn't have returned it.
So you can take it back. Okay, that may be. That's a separate question. That's after. If once you establish he owes Meiser, then you have that question.
Fine, but I still would have had $9,000 in my pocket. So I wouldn't carry
Meiser. The money in Eretz Yisrael, I'm assuming. We'd all think that I'm sure somebody's going. I'm going to hear that somebody lost that sum of money, and they didn't. I'm sure somewhere in their mind they think to themselves, if nobody claims it, even if there's no simon, I'm going to return that money. It's probably a Jew. They probably didn't really acquire it.
Okay, maybe.
I just want to say, if you use Jacob's model, that every single person's an investor.
Yeah.
So then this was a loss. In other words, it was a gain and a loss. It's a zero.
What does that mean?
In my business of life, I got $10,000.
I don't think he's saying business
of life.
No,
he's not saying everything.
When you
he's an investor for everything.
Things,
when you
even
buy
you're,
something.
You're
not for everything, not for this.
Yeah, but I think if I misplace money, I don't know if anybody would call that a bad investor.
It's not a good one. anyway, so Chaim, I don't know, Lachla Meiser, Chaim Kanievsky, he's a really Asher, Chaim Kanievsky in one of his Svarim says that he does owe Meiser, and he brings a proof, Shmaka proof. He brings a proof from Chumash, and he takes hers.
Avram?
Avram.
Yeah. Right, he got all this money from the war, gave it all to Malki Tzedek. And he gave Meiser. He gave Meiser on it. That's what he said.
He gave it away first before he gave Meiser?
I guess he gave 10% to Malki.
Yeah, he gave it all back.
He gave it to Still.
Oh, he didn't. No, I shouldn't say that. He didn't take any, and he gave Meiser. Right? He didn't take any.
What did he do first?
No, look in the source sheet. He gave everything.
He didn't take anything for himself.
He gave it back before he gave Meiser.
Yes, he didn't take.
There's our case where he gave the money back already, so he never got it.
He didn't take. Avram didn't take. He didn't want to take michut batzrech now.
He
didn't have it.
He gave Meiser, and then he gave it back.
It's one way or the other. I agree with him. If he took the money, then he's chayav and Meiser. If he never took the money, then what is he giving back?
This guy took the money in the story.
If you give away the money after you give a Meiser, then it's not a proof of anything.
That's the story, though. The story is the same thing, isn't it?
With Yaakov, with Avram,
Machane Yehuda story.
No, he gave the guy back his money already, and now he's asking him if he has to give Meiser.
No, he took it, owned it, and then whatever happened in terms of his chiyuv Meiser happens then, and then he gave it to the guy when he found out who it belonged to. Right?
Avram didn't give the Meiser from the spoils; he got it from his own packing.
No, from what he got.
Yes, he probably is.
Okay, you see there's a few of my
sales. Avram didn't give it all back.
$90,000,
Who says Avram gave $100,000 back?
Maybe too late. He gave it all back.
Rabbi Danzer, maybe Avram was just doing something extra above and beyond. Who says he was obligated?
So that, there...
It says
there,
in the pasuk he gave it back before it says that he gave it
so
back.
So therein lies the halachic ramification, perhaps, of the discussion of where it starts. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, right?
And then we say it's only a minhag anyway?
It's machlikas.
Yeah, maybe what?
So for sure it wasn't.
Yeah, but that person accepted upon himself.
Well, Shaila is what the existing minig is. I don't know. So
there's a minig on these cases.
It's maybe. So
who brought Yitzchak as a raya to Meiser Ksafim?
Rambam.
As Meiser Ksafim? It's talking about produce by Yitzchak, and he didn't say over there that it was Meiser Ksafim. It's either Avram or Yaakov. L'chera. In pertaining to our discussion, Yitzchak is not
negative.
From
that,
the Ravid's understanding of the Rambam?
Yeah, it looked like that. It wasn't Malcolm Michalik back then. I don't know. So,
for sure.
My success from Elsa? Right, I think so. So we had this discussion of, did it start with Avram, did it start with Yitzhak, did it start with Yaakov? So we were discussing, what's the halachic ramification of that? This might be a halachic ramification of where it starts. If you say that Avram, those that say that Avram Avinu was doing Meiser, our Meiser, if you see that that's what he did, that means that that's part of Meiser. If you see that Meiser started with Yitzhak or started with Yaakov Avinu and Avram did was something else, so then you wouldn't have a proof from there to what our halacha of Meiser is. Fine. One more quick thing. There's an interesting discussion about an owner of a business who works in his own business. Can he deduct the labor cost, the value of his labor, from his profits?
He's not talking about the IRS.
The IRS.
He's not talking about IRS.
Why not? Why not? No, he just takes the profit. He owns the business. He takes the profit.
Whatever's left is his anyway.
No.
And then it falls back on the issue that, you know,
yes, if
he doesn't
take a salary, he doesn't take a salary. It's his business. Whatever the company profits is his pocket. Right. But he works, right?
But if he doesn't take it, we have the same problem. He doesn't pay Meiser on that either.
Oh, so this is a machlokas, Chavas Yar and Yavetz. The Chavas Yar says you don't deduct it. The Yavetz says you do. You deduct your labor, the cost, the market value of your own labor invested in your company from your profits. So Rabbi Katz's Rebbe and Mr. Rothman are asking, what do you mean? What are you saying? That as if he virtually pays himself a salary, you have to pay Meiser on your salary. What's the difference? So Diane Weiss, the Minchas Yitzchak, points out that you see that the Yavetz's assumption is that you don't pay Meiser on payment for labor. It's like a wash. I invested $10,000 worth of labor. I got paid $10,000 cash. It's a zero sum, and that you only pay Meiser on investments that profit and go up and ribbis and things like that. But anytime I have to work for my money, it's a wash. And he says that's certainly not accepted by the post command. We reject that, and you certainly pay on a salary. But it appears to be that the Ivis had this very interesting opinion. The Chavis there also seems to have entertained that.
Okay, that's all.
Happy Thanksgiving.